Artificial intelligence, it seems to be everywhere these days, and like with many other creative industries, AI is having a massive impact on music. There's an AI-generated band called The Velvet Sundown, who have millions of plays on the streaming services. That recent Beatles song wouldn't have been possible without AI, but that doesn't stop Paul McCartney from joining other artists protesting the use of musicians' work in training AI models. What does it all mean? Come with me if you want to live. I mean to say, come with me if you want to play live. Here to talk us through some of the impacts of AI on the music industry is Dr. Sophie Freeman from the University of Melbourne. Morning, Sophie. How are you?
Good morning, Danny. I'm well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. This has a lot been going on in this space at the moment. What have AI companies been doing with music, like training this, how they train their systems, and how have music labels and platforms been responding to what AI companies are doing?
Absolutely. So you're right in saying that these music generation companies, so the most popular ones, probably Suno and Udio, people will know those, have been training their models based on, they say, all the available public music on the internet. And they have been accused by artists and labels of stealing copyrighted material in order to do that. So we've seen, like you said, we've seen prominent artists speaking out against that. We've also seen streaming platforms pushing back against this. So, for instance, French music platform Deezer has AI detection tools. Oh. How well they work is another question. Spotify more recently has announced some AI policies as well as policies around spam. But you mentioned the Velvet Sundown. It was sort of after they were really called out for platforming AI music like that. In terms of the labels, we've seen some pretty major court cases going on against Suno and Udio. So the labels are claiming that those companies have illegally trained on their catalogs. Interestingly, we saw just recently that Universal, who was suing Udio for the unauthorized use of their works, actually in a bit of a twist settled that court case and announced that they were now partnering with Udio to create a new, quote unquote, new revenue stream and a new licensing agreement for the product to train on the Universal catalog. So you can really see how that actually benefits both parties, putting them in quite a powerful position.
Yeah.
But question for me is, you know, how will this benefit artists? Will they be able to opt in? What kind of, you know, royalties will they get?
Yeah.
So lots of questions remain.
Those new revenue streams might not necessarily be ones that are flowing towards the artists.
No, which is a dynamic we've seen in the music industry for a very long time, Danny.
Mm. But the artists themselves are obviously utilising AI, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important to note that there are, you know, very interesting and creative uses of generative AI in music going on. We're seeing some, you know, artists using it in really compelling ways. It's also being used as a, you know, creative tool in a collaborative way,
yeah.
Idea generation, editing and mixing and so on. But at the same time, you know, those tools can be used by anybody to, within seconds, create a whole new track from a single text prompt. So that's no instruments, no other people, no input other than text. And that's certainly an area of contention.
Well, idea generation, when you say that, is it like a lyricist might be saying, oh, my love for you is like a rose. Someone said that before. I'll put this into ChatGPT and see what it says.
Yeah, absolutely. Things like that. And just, I guess, prompting new ideas or adding in musical elements, kind of getting a little bit of back and forth going, trying out things like that.
Yeah.
So we can see that it can be collaborative in that way.
Yeah. I mean, I guess sort of one of the arguments for AI would be like, well, a drum machine, which is now very popular in music, we sort of wouldn't have styles like hip hop and dance music without drum machines. I'm sure when they first came about, there was a fear that they were going to replace real actual human drummers, but they've all learned to live together side by side with one another. Is this possible with AI, or is AI too much of a step down a dark path that we don't necessarily want to be taking?
Absolutely. And that's a, you know, there's some of those drum machines are now iconic, you know, and really heralded as these really important instruments. There's certainly a possibility of that. And I kind of see those uses of AI, they're kind of different, right? So if you're using it as a tool, collaboration, maybe using it as an instrument in the same way that drum machines were used, I think we might see some really interesting stuff happening there. But I guess when you're talking about people just creating a whole new track, single text prompt, just making heaps and heaps of content, you know, what some people have called AI slop. For me, that's more where the issue is, because that can just replace musicians.
Right, so we see how this could possibly mean a significant threat to artists and creative. What are the impact for audiences and listeners? Would we actually embrace this creative content being made by AI, or will we always want to be the human touch in the art that we consume?
Absolutely. I mean, I have a personal ideas about that. You know, I want it to be that, yes, of course, we music is so sacred and we're going to be able to tell the difference. But it's a really interesting question. I think we're still really figuring that out. We really need more research on that front. But there have been some sort of tests and studies to show that a lot of people sometimes can't tell the difference. But I think a lot of the streaming platforms are already pushing people towards that kind of functional mood music. So music in playlists that are designed to be in the background of activities, you know, workouts, sleeping, that kind of thing. And so people are already a little bit, some people can feel a bit disconnected from artists. And I think that that's why some people have been leaving streaming. And AI generated music fits into that particular model really well, because it can provide that sort of safe, fit for purpose music where people aren't really listening carefully. And it's pretty beneficial for streaming platforms because they can get it royalty free or low royalty. But you mentioned Velvet Sundown at the top, and I think that that case demonstrated that a lot of people do care if music is made by people or AI, because people were really annoyed to find out that this music that they've been listening to was AI generated and they didn't know, you know. So I think that people want to feel a connection to music and to artists, to be part of a community and part of a scene. So I think there is some pushback against this.
How would we protect artists moving forward from being usurped by AI art?
Yeah, that's going to be a very important thing, and we need to stay ahead of that. So there are some technological protections that are coming out all the time, like digital watermarks, robotext, or metadata, kind of to prove that music was made by humans. There's also the AI detection tools I mentioned before, but the efficacy of those is not yet proven. And if we look at AI detection tools in other areas, like in education, these can be kind of inaccurate or problematic. So, but I think it's a really interesting time in Australia with the news a few weeks ago that the government had rejected the text and data mining exemption. So that would have allowed tech companies to freely scrape and train copyrighted material in Australia. And the creative industries came out very loudly and articulately saying, arguing against that and saying that they weren't consulted and saying that would basically amount to theft. So I think that's a really important step, and in some ways puts Australia kind of well in the, you know, l world leading in our approach to regulating AI companies. There's much more work to do there. So I think that we've got good copyright frameworks here. We can have things like opt-in frameworks so that artists can consent to having their work trained on, receiving credit and remuneration, blanket licensing, and so on. But other ways of supporting and protecting artists could also be outside of copyright, could be a basic income for artists. And that's actually being done in Ireland right now. And I think that's a really compelling example.
That's a really cool idea, and I think it's certainly something worth exploring. If we want to have that human touch in our art, we need to be there on the ground level supporting artists at all levels. And I guess one of the best ways that if you want to support local artists is go out and see some live gigs.
That's right. Absolutely. Go to the gigs, buy the merch if you can, buy a record and just get amongst it.
Dr. Sophie Freeman from the University of Melbourne, this is an absolutely fascinating area that you work in. Any chance I might be able to get you back on the show as the story progresses, as it no doubt will?
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to. And everything is moving so quickly. So yeah, it's a space to watch for sure.
Indeed, I imagine next time we're talking with one another, it'll be sort of all the humans would have left the streaming services and it'll be there specifically for AI to train themselves off the AI bands that they've trained themselves off, and the snake will continue to eat its tail.
That's right. And we'll all be there saying, like, nobody wanted this. Why do we have this?
This is 2SER Breakfast. Thank you so much, Dr. Sophie Freeman.
Thank you so much.